This episode of Lucas, Tigers, and Browns is brought to you by PWCC. Head over to pwccmarketplace.com and register. It only takes a few minutes, and it's 100% free. There you'll find weekly auctions with thousands of items, all starting at $10, closing every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific time. You have to be registered to bid. They have the most transparent buyer's premium feature in the industry, and extended bidding like no other auction house. Give it a try. You might find something you love.
Approaching.
Wow, two seasons. This is incredible. Cage, you're the best. You know that? So Luka Nation, this is either going to be incredible or a disaster. So this is the first time we're doing it, but I kind of wanted this to mimic, you know, four friends sitting around, maybe around a poker table with some beers.
The three best friends that anybody ever had.
Exactly.
Best friends. And Cage.
And Cage. Three best friends and Cage chaperoning. And just talk sports cards. Talk about the good things about the hobby, the thing that people are, you know, might want changed, what the future holds. We're about a month away from National. And to kick it off, I brought on two people that I would call friends, but I think we see the hobby indifferently. I really do. So, and this is people from all over the country. We got Gunnar in LA, Raul in Chicago, I'm in Florida, Cage is in New York, and we want to be kind of like a round table. So please subscribe, comment, like this show. And without further ado, I'll start out with you, Gunnar. And
that's it, no pressure.
You're obviously an opinionated guy. Raul is as well. And if you guys, Raul is AIH Sports, maybe the fastest growing, you know, YouTube channel out there. Every time I look, he has like 500 new subscribers on his YouTube channel.
I don't have any subscribers.
You have more than us? Are you buying them? Let's start there. I hear
that. Yeah, man. I'm buying them, man. You know that. You know what's up. That's how I grow my channel, man. That's how you do it these days, right?
I mean, do people do that? Rumor. I'm an old man.
I've heard rumors, but, you know.
Are there hobby people who do it? I mean, like, I can understand, like, people who, like, you know.
There have been accusations made by other content creators.
Is that frowned upon?
Well, the thing is, if you buy up subs and if you're making wrong picks, then, you know, you're going to get called out even more. So, you know, if someone wants to do that, yeah, they can do that. But then there's responsibility that comes out with it, so.
What I like are the people who have like 20,000 subs, 30,000 subscribers, and then like when they post something, three people respond. And you're like, what the hell? You have 20,000 people. How are only like, and it's your cousins. You know, like how are those people the only ones responding? That's
when and you DM like, at promo for.
Yeah, well, I like that person. At least if it wasn't for that response, I would get none. So I like that person. I'd feel lonely if it wasn't for DM me for promos.
I was talking to Miles a little bit before this, and he was like, call-out culture has always been a part of the hobby. It was just in one Absolutely. Place, a blowout forums where everyone can see. Do you feel like it's a little like scattered, you know, a little decentralized, so to speak?
I mean, not really. I think everyone follows the same stories, you know? Still, like, it still feels the same. The community is just larger. More things happening, yeah. Seems like it's something every day. Yeah, the community is pretty large. So
where we diverged is I did a story post on our IG. I said, you know, it takes a special type of person to poo-poo on people when they're losing money. You responded, I think tongue-in-cheek. I think tongue-in-cheek. You're like, I'm still going to do it because I told these people what to look out for. So what were those things that you told people to look out for?
Who are you talking to?
You, me? Gunnar. Who else?
I mean, I think the very basic thing that people should have been looking out for is that the voices that people turn to listen to in this space were entirely incorrect, right? Like, if I wanted to talk about growing in this space, like the amount of time that most people existed in sports cards during before and up to the pandemic, right? I'd spent years as a kid to learn all of these things, right? Like, I looked at all these people and I honestly thought to myself, I knew more about my specific category as a child than you do charging people advice on the internet for. And that's absurd. absolutely absurd. There are people who have been incredibly successful in this hobby. Like, you don't need to pester them. You don't need to bother them. They've written out their life theses on cards, and they've, like, thrown it onto the internet for people to see. But, like, their accounts get, like, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 followers with, like, $500,000 cards. There's, like, $1 million collections in Asia that are posted, and the accounts have, like, 1,000 followers. Like, that fault lies on the community because you haven't searched it out. You chose the simplest answer, and that's what's happening now.
Do you really believe the fault falls on the community and not the content creators to do a better job of promoting? Like, so you say there's a lot of good information out there, right?
Lots of great.
There's a lot of bad information out there. So doesn't the responsibility fall on the individual? And if they keep choosing to go and lose money and follow people who don't give the good advice or good ideas or good suggestions, they don't have experience. Like, I've always heard, don't take relationship advice from someone who has a bad relationship, right? Don't take finance advice from people who are poor. So doesn't that same thing apply? Doesn't the responsibility fall on the individual, not the content creator?
I think everyone will agree with me when I say this, is that...
Uh-oh.
You're a lawyer. Gunnar's a lawyer in training.
Cards are a meritocracy, right? Like, especially if you, like, deal in something tangible. If you deal in something tangible where, like, the entire focus is about, like, what kind of collectible, specific collectible do you that appeals to you. It speaks to a lot of who you want to relate to, how much time you've spent, a lot of these things like that. And a lot of people haven't spent the time to understand the hierarchy of that meritocracy, right? Like, it's like, if you call this fine art and you call this, you know, you call this fine art, then the super obscure 90s Jordan inserts that collectors flock over, that's fine art. And, like, you should familiarize yourself with that if you want to be within that society. And there's, like, tiers of that to everything, right? Like, there's even, like, pop culture modern art at, like, you know, bottom of the tier. But, like, there's a level for it for everybody, and everyone just felt for the same thing.
So, Rahul, stop smiling at me so much, man. It's just getting weird. So, but is it, what's funny about it, Gunnar, is I think you're saying something that people need to hear, right? I really do. But it's not hobby specific. You know, in leading up to this, I knew Rahul, he's a researcher. So, you know, I knew we were going to have this episode, and I knew I'm going to have to, you know, I'll be on my A game. Andrew thinks I don't know how to read. But what's funny about it is, you know, before coming into the hobby 5 years ago now, 6 years ago, you know, again, you know, re-entering it, you know, seeing that there was a groundswell, you know, I was putting money in the stock market. Eventually, I got tired of putting money in the stock market, and I said, I'm just going to take what I have left, and I'll move it over here, and I'm going to build it up. And that's kind of, you know, what I've done, right? I read a book. Man, it had to have been last year. The guy's name is Swedrow, I think. Larry Swedrow. He's written like 18 books. But the one I read, Andrew, you're going to love this. I might have to find it and send it to you. It's called The Incredible Shrinking Alpha, right? That's what it's called. And basically the premise of the book was that if you look at the performance of active fund managers, people who are picking stocks, they actually underperformed the S&P 500 and the traditional indexes over time. So, you know, and it goes to speak about who are these people you're trusting your money with? Who are the fund managers behind these actively, you know, collated funds that you're investing in? And I guess part of it is sometimes you get too cute, right? You know, like the hobby's been here. This is what you're trying to say, right? The hobby's been here. The cards have been here. You know, the research has been done by the people who have been here. They know where to put their money. Those are the people who basically are the S&P 500 of the hobby. The active managers are the people who are charging you money. To me, you know what it reminds me of? When I was in college and one of my gambleholic friends paid a guy named Scott Baldwin to pick winners for him. And every once in a while, he'd get a winner and he'd be like, oh, this guy's a genius. I'm like, he's not a genius. He's got 10 of you. He gives 5 of you one pick, 5 of you the other pick, and 5 of you think he's a genius. What do you think this is some actual science to this? No way. So, I mean, I know it sounds harsh. I know Andrew, you know, was saying don't pick on people when they're losing. But I kind of fall on the same side as you, which is there's enough info out there. right? There's enough stuff out there. And, you know, the people who blindly follow, you know, I don't want to say they deserve to lose, right? But you blindly follow someone who's telling you this is what you should get, you know, buy this, buy that. It, you know, there's a reason why do your own research actually exists, right? I mean, Rahul, am I completely off base here or what?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean,
that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I know that's maybe I should play the role of devil's advocate.
No, please, we want the truth.
No, yeah, but the reality is there. Before you could say 2020, this hobby was full of collectors, and now, you know, since the pandemic, it has become a hobby of investors. It's becoming more Wall Street oriented. You have the Wall Street push. But a lot of the people that are promoted, probably by the industry itself, I don't think they understand the basics of it. And the way that you make money, in my opinion, is you got to understand the Federal Reserve. They're the one that pumped the money into the system. So in 2020, you had all this monopoly money coming into the system, and people were making money hands over fist. And now what? The Federal Reserve is just raising interest rates. So, I mean, people, in my opinion, should have been selling off if they're investors, right? I'm not talking about collectors, investors. If you're investing, you know, you should be dumping it before the Fed is trying to, you know, raise interest rates. And, you know, research over time, you know, I've done my videos that, you know, when the Fed's trying to unwind their balance sheet and raising interest rates, historically, that's not the best time for collectibles in general, including art. And then you could look at other assets as well. Crypto took a hit, right?
Yep.
During this time. So I don't know. I mean,
Rahul, I'll tell you something, and I'll ask your follow-up on it, because what I want to do is, you know, before we get too crazy, because I love the Federal Reserve, but it's not federal, and they're not really reserving anything, so I think it's funny, the irony there. But I want to make it like hobby-specific, right? I want to bring it back to the hobby, and your stuff is great. And so the actionable items on this, I'll tell you, you know, what our action was. Last year, maybe more than a year ago, Andrew said to me, hey, Cage, with the changing economic times, we have to stop giving plays, because what worked for us in 2020, when the market was one way, and while the Fed was doing what they were doing, and while everybody had stimulus money, everybody was flush with cash, is no longer going to work when that starts to level itself out. And I, at first, was against it, you know, mostly because, and guys, you tell me what you think here. I'm trying to be as honest as I can. You know, the reason why people give picks and plays is because it does bring an audience. Right. It brings an audience to say, hey, I'm going to follow these guys, you know, and let me also be the first one to tell you, I got caught up in the way the market was trending, you know, cards as fantasy, you know, cards as, you know, I don't need to play DraftKings because I'm just going to buy this guy's cards and hope that if he has a couple of good games, I can sell him a week later. And, you know, for a while, you that was working.
Austin Matthews bag, and now I'm stuck holding it.
Right. Yeah. Well, I anybody who bought Austin Matthews,
the one you told me to
get, the jumbo. Dude, it's like a jumbo picture frame. That's like you could beat somebody with that. I thought this was
like 2x volatility. So I thought I'd get 2x like the returns.
Bigger than your head. Not bigger than my head, though. But you know what I mean. I mean, like, so I guess where I'm going with this is, you know, is it also one of the things where people need to adapt, right? You know, like the markets change, the amount of money that's in there changes. And maybe, you know, I guess what I'd ask you, Rahul, is you've done all this research. You know, what's the action plan? We stopped giving plays. Now, that doesn't mean people didn't buy Brandon Clark and are now sitting with Brandon Clark. And for that, I apologize, folks. But at the time, if you bought Brandon Clark, he had a good run in the playoffs. I didn't know that everybody was going to be grading every single hoops-based Brandon Clark in the world.
Right.
And that was going to happen. But so let's just assume, you know, these people, they've spun themselves into a knot now. Or as Andrew likes to say, my brain is in a pretzel. Right. Maybe because they follow the wrong people. They follow the wrong advice. Right. They're unwinding what they have going on. How do they do that? What's the action plan for those guys now that have stacks of PSA 8s and 7s coming back that are almost worthless? They have a couple of decent cards here and there with the changing macroeconomics, with the changing times, the Fed doing what they're doing. What do you tell people to do? Again, do your own research. But if Rahul's doing it for you, what does he say?
So if I had PSA 8s and PSA 7s coming back, I got all my cards back from PSA, by the way. But, you know, if I were in that situation getting these cards, what I would be doing is, okay, I'd probably be selling those off because they're junk slabs, most of them, unless they're, you know, a scarce card from back in the day and high in demand. I'd be selling those off. And what I try to be doing is I try to be looking for Hall of Fame greats where the prices have tanked significantly. And I would just try to look for the low population cards, high demand cards, and then try to go after those. And that being said, I do want to see, okay, is the Fed going to be aggressively raising interest rates? If they're going to continue to aggressively raise interest rates, then, you know, I may not be buying. But if they're going to reverse the trend, then higher probability that some of these sports cards that have tanked significantly are going to go higher. So that's what I'd be trying to doing. Just try to raise cash and try to look for, just dip my toes into these high in demand cards that are scarce and of Hall of Fame guys like GOATs. So all the guys like Mays, Aaron, and MJ, the list goes on and on for those guys.
No, Jordan, what do you think?
Buy Shaq. No one ever because nobody to buy Shaq. Dude,
because I want to buy Shaq, and I got burned. Like, if, you know, you remember, if I don't say burned, I made money on Shaq. But if instead of buying Shaq's Upper Deck rookie card for $500 and selling it for $1,000 or $1,500, I was taking every two Shaqs and buying a LeBron Chrome or buying Michael Jordan cards at the time, my multiple would have been significantly more. And
what do you think about your Mariano Rivera play? I mean, that's a GOAT in a – I mean, Cage the made problem. A play on the Bowman, PSA the 10.
You know what's funny that you bring up Shaq and you bring up Mo? Pitchers, closers especially, just like big men, are just – they don't get hobby love. It's sort of like what Gunnar will tell you not to invest in goalies.
Yeah, it won't sell.
Yeah, may I interject about Mariano Rivera? So I remember when he was inducted to the Hall of Fame. Was it, what, 2019? Mm-hmm. So I remember some of his PSA 9s. I was just dabbling in them. I just bought one. And then right before he was announced to the Hall of Fame, his card doubled overnight. And I haven't followed the prices since then. But the way that it used to work, from my understanding, is you buy Hall of Famers right before they're announced, and then you dump them. And now all these Hall of Fame guys have been overinflated, in my opinion. And it's just much harder. It was an easy play back in the day, but now.
It's like, well, because everyone's doing it, right?
Yeah, everyone's doing it. So it's lost the art of trying to make money with that.
To be fair, I mean, if we just look at the card ladder chart of Mariano, it's actually like, it does stand the test of time. It really does. It holds strong, even in a market where, sure, it doesn't have that, but you also don't see the fall off, right? It's still at right at that $1,000.
So I was telling people to buy that early on in the show, saying that this was the kind of card at $500-$600, right? But then it flew. It was like almost $2,000. You know, and it, like everything else, has come down, but it hasn't, you know, been cut 1/6. And it's because you would think there'd be more of them. He's the only unanimous Hall of Famer ever. But closers, you know, it's tough. It's a lesson to learn, because, you know, it's one of those things. I love having time in the market instead of trying to time the market. It teaches me lessons, the whole deal. But when the game changes, also collectors' patterns change. And it's really funny to think about, right? So, you know, Gunnar talked about, like, what cards are art, right? And that the certain segments of the cards that are art. I'm going to tell you, I'll say something, and then I'd love to know what both of you guys think, because you come at it from a different direction. Gunnar first, then Rahul, maybe from an analytics perspective, the whole deal. So here's my take. If you collected in the 90s and even early 2000, the way you collected and what was the sought after stuff, what people were looking for, is very different than it was now. Are you collecting the 90s because basketball was a different sport? It was centers. People wanted centers. People wanted David Robinson. People wanted Shaq. People wanted, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon. Obviously, they still wanted Jordan, but it wasn't like, oh, that's a big man. The hell with him. You know what I mean? Like, no, nobody wants a big man. More so in football. In football, I remember opening 93 and 94 Upper Deck SP products, right? And Falk was the rookie. He was a running back, you know, very, like, shifty, you know, 1,000 kind of guy. But I'll never forget the 94 Holloview set and Holloview die cut set and all the upper deck Pro Bowl sets, you name it. The guys that you wanted, sure, Marino, but Emmett Smith and Barry Sanders sold for a ton. A ton. And Jerry Rice, close to what the quarterback sold for. Sure, Marino, Montana, Elway. Montana, not so much because he was in a Chiefs uniform, believe it or not, in 94. So it was a little weird. But you know, those guys, the quarterbacks, Favre, they sold. But the, so did the those top running backs, right? Now it's very different. I'm wondering whether or not you can take that to the type of cards as well. Because I'm gonna say something. I'm gonna throw it out there and the whole deal. Some of the cards that are being held up now as the cards to buy were not the cards to buy until a couple of years ago, right? And I know, Gunnar, maybe you can bring in the Asian markets and stuff like that as well, but PMGs will be my example, all right? I know that right now, people of a certain age who have a certain amount of money, they invest in PMGs, they invest in these, you know, numbered 90s Jordan cards, the whole deal. To me, I wonder if just like centers to guards, running backs to quarterbacks, if in 10, 20, or 30 years, when that segment of money people who are attached to those PMGs and those 90s Jordans cards, I wonder if in 20 years when people are, wow, I collected, you know, Flawless, or I liked Logo Man, or I did Prism, whatever it is, and I didn't even, who cares about that? It's just a weird red blood clot looking thing. Could I be right? Or is that card now so ingrained in the hobby history that no matter what, 50 years from now, people are going to be talking about the precious metal gems?
I definitely think that there's universal cards that last forever, but flavor of the week changes a lot, right? Like anyone that's listening to this, like I told my friend this a long time ago and he's like, where do I look next for like what cards I should look for next? And we've been talking about cards for years and he has stacks of Beckett's all in his room. And there's an online archive for Beckett magazines. Like you should go read the articles and see what's popular, like see what just came out and like follow it. Cause like what was printed in the past tells you a lot of what's popular now. It's not as difficult as what people think. It's not like all these trends were like made up in a heartbeat. Yeah, the order of like the cards and their importance change over time, but like the stuff that's been chased has been chased for a while. And like in a lot of cases that like you should appreciate like that fine art aspect of like what everyone else is chasing, right? Like how many times have I said on your channel, like you should understand your buyer of any card you look for. I think that's like very important, right? Like the card, the person that like wants to buy your card, like every card you should get, you should know someone else instantly wants. And if it's not something else somebody wants, then what are you doing with the card in the first place?
Correct. That's what we talk about, right? We talk about don't buy something that you love, buy something that everybody loves.
Like if your intention is to sell it is absolutely right. Like if you're keeping it for yourself, sure, that's for you. But if you want to like, a lot of people enter this space intending to look for money. So if you intend to look for money, then you need to think a little broader than that.
Do you, what's your intent? Like, did you enter the space out of joy and then you got in, you're like, I want to make money on it. Were you always in it for the money? Is it both? What was your intent?
I mean, I got in as a kid to play the game. And then I found that trading the cards and selling them could sustain playing the game. And then I found out that I was better at trading the cards than playing the game. And then I spiraled out.
Don't sell yourself short.
And spiraled
Magic
out.
Magic the Gathering, right?
Chasing the best cards in the game. Yeah. I
heard you were pretty good. Not the best, but I heard you're right there near the top.
I did several card games, right? Like across the board. Like it's
incredible. They named the card after him. He's Brown Eyes, Brown Hair Dragon. That's him right there.
I wish. yeah, there's so many different verticals to explore. Like I have, you know, I'm friends with Hannah. She collects cards and she just got back from Korea maybe a couple weeks ago. And I met up with her for lunch yesterday. And I was telling her that it's really funny talking to her because I'm raised in the United States. Like, I was raised in the United States, but I was taught by Asian collectors versus how Hannah was raised in Korea, moved to the United States, but she was taught collecting by American collectors, and how twisted the two like communities have become. And it's entirely different. Like,
what are some of the differences?
I was taught to go search like the communities decide what cards are best. The community decides like what things are valued. Like, the community decides like what things people chase. And like, it's not up to a singular person to decide like what things are best. There are attributes that are discussed and all these other things. People appreciate the medium of the cardboard far more to finding the right asset in Asia than the commoditization of the trading cards that has happened in the United States. It's entirely different.
But she was big on F1, right? And sure. F1, everyone was chasing like Sapphire and Topps Chrome, where there's these like Futera cards that are the true rookies that everyone was just missing.
I mean, niches get discovered over time, right? Like, things get popularized based on how these things, like, you're talking to, you're acting
at your cage.
Yeah.
I mean, the F1's price. What'd you say?
Is that you vibrating?
Is that your vibrator cage?
Maybe. Not that I know of. I mean, so there's price discovery in F1. F1's one of those weird things. I hear something. I don't know if it's me. It's just my echo, maybe. But not a vibrating. But it's you know, that I give a pass to. But it's the opposite end of the spectrum of what we're talking about, right? I mean, F1, people love it now. Who knows what's going to happen with F1 in 5 years, in 10 years, you name it. And I mean, switching over to Rahul, what's funny is when he gives advice about buying cards, he's talking about guys where the cards have already seen multiple generations of collectors continue to collect them. Mm-hmm. That's why when he says Maze, he says Mantle, I guess Jordan now is enough, because people, young kids who never even saw a Jordan play, are still buying Jordan. You know, Shaq. That's a different kind of, he's in a Shaq mode, man. So Rahul, is that why you do that? Right. Because now it's even more data. It's, you know, those swings that are there, like, okay, well, you know, people were collecting Chris Bosh, but now they're not, you know what I mean? You know, are we going with those Hall of Famers, those all-time greats for a reason?
Yeah. So just looking at different markets, just if once again, if someone's speculating, right? So I gave the analogy the last time around in the interview where you had me on, and I was talking about, okay, gold crashed significantly, or it stayed constant over the past decade. And I was talking about one particular gold financing company that has maintained its value. It was the cream of the crop, Franco Nevada. So what happens is, okay, suppose a market does crumble down, people are going to resort to, or they're going to buy up the cards or stocks that people know about and have the most value. They're not going to go after, like you said, a Chris Bosh. They're not going to go after, you know, Greg Maddux, even though he was a phenomenal player. People are going to be like, okay, we know that Mays was probably the third best player, Hank Aaron, the second best player, Babe Ruth, MJ, the GOAT, and maybe LeBron. People are saying he's the second best, whether people like him or not. So people are going to resort to names that they're familiar with and are sophisticated investors, in my opinion. So that's why I keep on saying that, hey, you know, when there's a huge crash, and some people are saying there's huge crash right now, I mean, what I want to eyeball, those same guys, LeBron, MJ, Mays, Mantle, Babe Ruth. I know some
are telling Pele.
Exactly. Pele.
Garincha.
Gretzky.
I'm curious. I keep hearing crash. Have we had a crash or a crash coming?
Well,
both.
Both. I mean, I think we have stage one right now from February and March of last year to about right now. And I've talked about in my few videos, I expect a dead cat bounce probably for the next few years. And that's the assumption that the Federal Reserve is going to reverse course on raising interest rates. If they do, I think that's going to benefit sports cards and collectibles specifically those low population, high demand cards, not the Chris Bosh cards of the world. And not like some Hall of Fame guy, you know, no offense to Shaq. I don't see Shaq cards going up like crazy, even though I like Shaq, by the way.
Love Shaq.
Yeah. I have an autograph back right now here. I could show you, but
nice.
Yeah.
Did you get it in person or are you pulling a pack?
No, I got it on eBay.
All right. So
PSA authenticated. So
we've spent a good amount of time here talking about like the investment side of the whole deal, right? Are people still allowed to have fun?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, sure. Are you having fun?
Yeah.
You didn't answer my text today about that, by the way, Dick.
Me?
Yeah, I texted you. Are you having fun? You didn't even answer me.
Dude, you are very like naggy today about like texts and whatever the
hell. I got a schedule.
Oh, dude. Okay, so check this out. You ready? The king of too long don't read. All right. Can you see this? Can you guys see this? Or is it too much of a glare? There you go. Look at this. This is what he sends me. This is what he sends me. And at the bottom of it, a whole long thing. At the bottom of it, more things. The bottom of, are you having fun? Okay. I didn't see that part. It was a lot of shit.
That was our cigar night. Guys, yeah. Make sure to RSVP. It's going to be incredible. Like I promised you, open bar, stogies on cage. What else?
Food.
It's going to be fun.
What I asked is, Gunnar, what are you doing for fun? You're breaking cards. You go live.
He hangs out with Mitch at Bullpen, and they have a blast.
No, I want him to talk about it because every once in a while, I just happen on his stream. And by the way, I'm not a huge soccer, you know, fan or nerd. But I learn more in, you know, just tuning in and trolling the comments and stuff like that.
I got to start recording it, but my computer crashes when I try to run the thing. So I think I'm going to change the format to try to record it and like post them. But like it's been,
I could EP it.
It's definitely, definitely fun. Like everyone says everything is crashing, but every market is different. Every specific market is different. Everything, like things are developing different ways. Like this could be a vintage renaissance that we've never seen before, right? Like everyone could panic and go into safety assets, just like Raul's describing, just like how people buy up gold in times of, you know, in times of recession. Could be the sports card version is people buy up mantles, and I've seen a lot of it already, right? Like, you know, it's about time, right? Like things change, tastes change. People need to just explore more about the hobby. So why not?
I have
go check out some Robert Edwards auctions, guys. I mean, I'm sure they've got some great stuff up there all the time.
I got my first Niki Lauda in grading right now. I'll let you know what it grades.
Nice.
I don't hear anyone talk about this, and I don't understand why. So we talk about cards booming in 2020, but really what I've seen is a generation of kids, I'll speak to about myself, that don't want to work for the man. Okay, true. We saw an influx of cash. We don't want to work for the man. We have internet. We want to do things on our own terms, right? We want to live on our own terms. So think about how many people have started businesses in the hobby. How many young kids have started businesses, whether that's breaking or consigning or creating content? Go ahead, Gunnar. What do you think of that? I think that's a good thing.
I mean, sure, that's a good thing. But like, I look back on my time in corporate and like, I feel like I've wasted a lot of my life, but I take away so many skills of like what I learned, who I was with, like I chose who I worked with. Like I consider my old bosses like dear friends, and like we still text because like my old IT manager brought me and taught me all this AV stuff, like all the stuff I have behind me. It's all from experience I got doing on the job. Like I grew up a lot doing that job. Like I lost my soul. I worked super hard. Like I've lost a decade of my life, but I came out a different person. And like, you know, in my 30s now doing this card thing, like personally, I'm able to relate to a lot of other working professionals because of what I've observed in a professional environment. And then it also lends a lot to my like statistical analysis, things you understand operations wise. It gives you a lot of perspective in the world. And like, I am glad for the, like, you know, I hate to say it, but I am glad for the experience I gave up for those years because I took away a lot from it.
Rahul, do you hate corporate America like Andrew does?
I work in corporate America, so
it's a necessary evil.
Yeah, I took some time off for work just to do this.
It's not a necessary evil, Gunnar. We've been told that it's a necessary evil. But think about the kids that have graduated and started businesses. They graduated, let's say, in 2018. You know, they were collecting sneakers while they were in college. And then they're like, yo, look at this whole industry that's booming. Why would I go work for Merrill Lynch and wear a suit every day where I could make more money on cards? And not only can I make money on the cards, I could start a business within cards.
Because all of those industries are incredibly difficult with super high risk tolerances that like very few people succeed in the first place. Like, this is why, like, I thought it was absurd to start with, that all these people who jump in sports cards, you had never seen them before, made thousands of dollars. Like, that's insane. That's not sustainable. It is super risky. You can lose everything. Collectibles are like all over the place. You need to be very careful and you need to be very prepared to lose everything, right? Like, these are things that should be talked about all the time. And like,
100%.
My dad ran a restaurant business. Yeah. Those go out of business all the time too.
That's also true.
Correct. Like, which is why most people don't go into it.
Yeah.
So what are we supposed to do? Play safe, play small?
Yeah. Yeah.
I saved up for 10 years to get to this point.
You know what this is like? This is like the last couple of years of kids who either came out of college or decided that they were going to crawl out of their parents' basement at the age of 35, maybe because they don't have health insurance. They didn't get out of college.
I just bought health insurance.
But it's like walking into a casino at the time that the casino is announcing everybody who pulls a slot machine for the next couple of months is going to win. Right, it gives you an unreasonable expectation of what you can build as a foundation for a business going forward. Right, like, and I make this comparison a lot, guys. Raul, I see you shaking your head, and I love it. I want to let you go and wind you up and just let you tell everyone why I'm so right. I have a friend who used to go to the Turning Stone Casino when we were up in school, and he would walk in and he would like, "All right, it's time to go to work." And I'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? This isn't work. You're going to lose your shirt. And the worst thing that could happen was he won that one out of 20 times. Because then the rest of the week, he's like, I got to go back. This is so – I mean, look, I went to work. I made so much money. And you're like, dude, you're going to lose twice as much next time. That's not the way it works. And do we need to do a better job of telling people out there that the last couple of years is not the way it works? Or are they finding out on their own with their PSA 7s and small wallets?
It's tough.
Well, I think that people with larger audiences, if they want to make sure that they don't get, how should I say this? I mean, some channels right now, they're getting crushed. People are just coming after them left and right. And that's because they didn't, in my opinion, warn people about, you know, the dangers over a year ago when they should have clearly been warning them, like you're talking about, Cage. So I believe in this concept of anti-fragile. Have you heard of Nassim Taleb's book, Anti-Fragile? It's one of the best books that I've read.
I've read words. I didn't fully understand them.
Okay. So basically,
I've heard of Taleb Kweli. Yeah. No, not the same person, right?
Dude, Talib Kweli and Mos Def. If people knew about that, they would start collecting their cards. That was sick.
So,
Miles, like, what the fuck are these
guys? I'm looking up the book.
He's like, well, I'm still here?
Don't look up the book. Look up Mos Def and Talib Kweli. You'll learn more from them than you'll ever from Nassim Taleb.
Just to get by. Go ahead, Raul. You got it.
So, Taleb's book about anti-fragile, he said that whatever anyone's basically trying to do, you want to have a strategy that's anti-fragile. If you're running a business, anti-fragile, you don't want a business that's fragile. That suppose in sports cards, you get a nasty crush in prices like we've seen over the past year, and then maybe it goes down over the next few years. So these guys that just started out that were making hundreds of thousands of dollars that are, what, 18, 19, 20 years old, they never saw a recession. They were too young to see 2008, where people that are much older than me, their house values pretty much kept on going down until they stabilized the last few years if they didn't foreclose on their houses. So like Cage was saying, it's better if someone fails when they begin. And now a lot of people saw success and now they're having to deal with a down market. And sure, we may see some cards go up, after a bounce, but at the same time, people need to be prepared for some sort of downturn and try to manage their way out of it. And once again, I do applaud people, risk takers, for, you know, taking risks and just doing their own thing.
Nothing ever got done without taking that risk. I mean, 100%. Yeah, sure.
Breakers haven't actually seen the crash that other people have sustained. How would you make a breaking business right now? Let's say you're a college kid, you started a business, all you've seen was success as a breaker. Mm-hmm. You know, you have breakers working underneath of you. You might have a few whatnot channels, thousands of – how would you make that anti-fragile?
At this point? Oh, man, that's tough. I would try to partner up with Fanatics, or try to be not buddies with Josh, but I would try to develop a –
Cardporn will roast you. Cardporn will come onto our DMs, ask us to unblock Josh, and then roast them.
Yeah, no, Cardporn follows me. But no, what I'm saying is Fanatics –
Rahul, I think you are Cardporn, by the way.
I think so.
No, but that being said, okay, Fanatics is going to be taking over, right? And I've obviously talked about Fanatics in my videos, and obviously some people didn't like my takes on them. But we know they're going to be the future, and they may actually end up buying Panini. So if I were a breaker – I would try to have a better relationship with Fanatics, or try to make sure I present my business in a manner that isn't shady, because we've seen stories, not to get into specifics, of breakers, you know, doing the hanky panky.
Yes.
I think. So, you know, it's all about presentation. So if they want to be anti-fragile, improve their image, try to develop a relationship with Fanatics or get to know some of the people, and then move on. Because otherwise, a lot of these guys are they're going to be losing their businesses, in my opinion, in the next few years. Some LCS stores, even some breakers right now, because Fanatics may not do business with them.
We've seen group submissions. We've seen new consigners. We've seen new auction houses, new grading companies. New companies creating slabs or slab cases. There's so many new businesses starting up in this space.
I mean, Raul, you brought up something that's great, right? And if I were writing a treatise on this, right, you know, about the hobby, you talk about Fanatics coming in, right? I think what I would do is I would look to other areas, right? And I would say, all right, if everybody's hope is that Fanatics is going to save them, usually if everybody's on one ship, that ship sinks. Okay.
Not Noah's Ark.
Yeah, all right. Well, we started this episode off kind of like the Titanic, but it may hit an iceberg. This is just what happens, right? I mean, this is the deal, man. And I guess what I mean by that is, just because Fanatics is good at what they do doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be good at or 10x the people that come in here. I'll give two examples, right? In the NFT space, which I know you guys both know a little bit about, for the last year and a half, everybody was talking about how Coinbase was going to come in. And that Coinbase was a game changer. And that Coinbase was going to be awesome. And that they have millions upon millions of people who have wallets. And that once their wallet is going to have an NFT trading platform, it's going to introduce those millions of people to NFTs. All right. And because Coinbase was a juggernaut, even though Coinbase was not in NFTs, it was an ancillary type of business. And, you know, everything was going to be great. And they were going to come in. I think last week, one day, the Coinbase NFT market did $5,000 in total volume. Because the
bluster, I've sold more on Panini myself.
The expectation doesn't always match up. And a lot of the time it's because, you know, the ins and outs, the inner workings, the whole deal. I'll give you an example just outside of NFTs, because some people hear NFTs and they tune out. Remember when Time Warner wanted to get into the new media space so bad that they bought AOL? Remember that merger, the AOL-Time Warner merger? Because Time Warner was old media. They were a different way of doing things, and they paid $65 billion, I think, was the merger. It was back in 01. Right? It was right after, you know, dot-com, bubbles, balloons, the whole nine yards. A year after the deal, they took a $99 billion write-down. Right? So they paid $65 billion and took a $99 billion write-down. Why?
Should have bought Google.
Should have bought Google, is damn right. But they didn't. And you want to know why they didn't? Because they didn't understand the space. They didn't understand what they were getting into. There's a danger in just expecting somebody who is a name, or an ancillary business to know everything and to hit the ground running. And you know what the other part about it is? Macroeconomics play a huge role, right? They bought it in 01. You had 9/11. You had a changing economy. And when everything's going good, it sounds like the greatest deal on earth. Of course, how could AOL and Time Warner combined not make, you know, 1 plus 1, 65 billion? Has got to be worth 11, right? It's got to be worth this crazy thing. Same thing the way it sounds with Fanatics. I don't know whether or not, I mean, that it doesn't, to me, yeah, it might not be as guaranteed as everybody thinks.
Yeah, that's, you make a really good point. And what I would add is, if I ran a breakers business, I would probably move into a different arena. I would probably do consignment. If I had a large breaking business, I think you do that now.
Andrew does.
Yeah, yeah, right.
He's Captain Consignment.
Have you read this book by Nassim Taleb? It's called Anti-Fragile. That's what we're doing with the podcast.
Just every, well, the average millionaire has 7 streams of income. Andrew tells me that all the time. Actually, he doesn't. I just said it for the first time. He's hearing, I agree, it. Going, they, wow, should, that's amazing.
But we're the juggernaut on that.
If I'm allowed to answer this about breaking, and then I want to see Gunnar, because Gunnar breaks, right? But he, I think, is doing something that is smart. It's a specialized break. Andrew has an idea of, hey, if you're going to break, break 86 FLIR boxes. Break things that people are going to want to break. If I were a breaker, I would own the fact that I was basically a casino, all right? I would own the fact that 90% of people who are going to purchase from me are going to lose, and that would be who I'm marketing to, because that's not what built breaking up. What built breaking up was that people got into breaks, they got their cards, they graded their cards, and half the people did really well. The other half basically broke even. That is not breaking now, right? And I think what will break breaking – sorry, had to do it, is when the economy does a little bit of a reversal, at the same time as prices of what's being pulled out of these boxes does a reversal, right? There's a Mac Jones one of one for $100,000. Sure. Anytime you have that, people are going to be breaking for that lottery ticket, right? Just like when people go into you know, your 7-Eleven or a gas station, they do a scratch-off. They know chances are they're going to lose, but they're doing it because they can buy in for a chance at a jackpot. As long as everybody breaking understands that, that's great. But I don't think many people who are buying into breaking do understand that, right? That'll get a stigma. It'll get all kinds of other fun stuff. It's why I personally don't love breaking.
You don't think people who break understand that they're going to lose money more times than not?
I think some do, but I think if you look at, just like everything else, recency here, people who were buying into breaks didn't necessarily lose at the clip that they are losing now and that they're going to be losing when pricing takes a little bit of a dip, right? When we used to be able to break boxes and whatever base rookies you got, you could grade and make money on. That's no longer the case. You know what I mean? So think about it, right? Sure, there's going to be that top 5 or 10% that's going to kill it in the break. And there's going to be that bottom 5 or 10% that really got screwed. But there was that fleshy middle where they all did okay. You know, lost a little, made a little, you name it. When that gets squeezed, breaking's an entirely different animal. It's my thought.
Gunnar, you break?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
What's your favorite product to break?
Merlin.
Yeah, Merlin, apparently.
Disney movie?
It's just for fun to help build up the... to help build up the stream for a little bit, but I'll start recording some content with it.
Why is Panini Treble soccer cards so expensive?
Because some of the cards people are saying look like PMGs, so, you know, hype train went out of control, so people bought a bunch of stuff.
I like the design of the cards. I mean, I agree they're really nice, but like, even the entry point on, like, I wanted to get like a Luka Modric, you know, known very, like, a few $100, not great.
They were very cheap before everyone started talking about them, so that's what happened. But I mean, like, these opportunities, like, people talk about trends that don't exist. That was like a micro trend within like the soccer niche that, like, I think a lot of people probably 3 to 5x'd on that happened because people explored a set. Like, somebody had to have held those sets before, because I think like the Modric you're talking about was probably like $20 before, and now it's like 100 and something. Like, this happens. Like, there's still so much opportunity across the board in cards. Like, but that's the thing, you can't ever time, you can't ever like program when something is going to get popular. You don't know that. Like, Cage, are you like a old school hockey guy?
No, but I like old time hockey.
He was a goalie.
Old time hockey.
like those black, you know, like in Black Diamond, those die cuts that are like run to the cup. They have like the
I know those. I mean, I'm not a huge hockey fan. I say old time hockey. That's from Slapshot, the movie. But I did watch hockey, you know, back in the day, in the mid '90s. If you Rangers were actually pretty good, you know.
And, but trends happen, right? Trends happen. Like people were like, oh, you know, better buy up this card because it's running out. But like, it just depends on like how much time and the specific category of all the things that you want to look into. And like, yeah, it's just there's subcultures to everything.
There are runs. Hockey's usually the last one, right? People went for Logo Man in basketball. That trickled out to, you know, the NFL Shield, and now people are buying those NHL patches that look like the NHL Shield. I see a lot of those being posted.
It's a nice product.
That's kind of the way stuff rules. What's in soccer? What's the shield for soccer? What's like the one of one in soccer? What do they have there? Is it anything, Andrew? Is it like, you know, is there like something that's on everyone's jersey?
I mean, there was a Messi Barcelona badge, Eminence 101, that sold for like 60K on PWCC Premier last week. It's a big one.
I don't know if this will make sense to people. It hit me yesterday. So I was watching Godfather 2. And there was a moment where Corleone, the younger, the son, Al Pacino, right?
Mm-hmm. Michael.
The old guy came up and he's like, we're bigger than the gas business now, right? Their olive oil business.
It was Hyman Roth. We're bigger than U.S. Steel.
We're bigger than U.S. Steel. God, you're so good at movie quotes. And it hit me. I was like, huh. To build an industry requires people. People that take risks, that fight, that go out there. And I was like, why can't that be sports cards? Why can't we build a huge business and a huge industry together?
You can, and it has been built. But I think what Rahul was saying here is, you know, everything's got to fall right. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Fed Reserve, what they're doing has a fall. Right. I mean, you know, the last time that there was a 0.75 basis increase was 1994.
Sure. You know? And short-sighted. Yes. I agree.
The junk wax era, by the way.
This guy
knows. History repeating, right?
The junk wax era. Bad. So I agree. I think we're in the junk slab era, all that stuff. But if we fill participants in, right, at that pyramid, if we bring more people in, they want to be a part of it. It's fun. It's sports. It's gambling. It's speculation. It's investing. It's collecting. Why can't we just grow the pie? Right? That should be our joint goal. Not necessarily tearing businesses down or saying you guys don't do it right. And I'm not saying you guys do that. I'm not. But all I'm saying is, what if we can do that together? Grow this industry. Is that far-fetched? Is it that not possible?
Wasn't 2020 like that, though?
So
and now go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just want to ask like a little bit of a pointed question. It's more of like
point at me.
You know, like the criticism that's typically levied, like you understand like the reason why it's levied in the first place. It's usually because one of the businesses is providing a business practice that takes away the value that is provided to the customer. And like for me, again, I have a very unique background compared to everyone else, but in trading card games, people wouldn't tolerate like a 20% profit margin delta. Like that value, customer basis value is outrageous. In sports cards, we're returning like 5 to 10% on a product, and it's like gross. And people add more and make it like they grow that margin even more to make their margins even worse. And that's what people have problems with when the values stop lining up to the customers. It's a big problem. Big problem.
So two ways of going with this. Number one, to answer Andrew's point, I don't think it's one way or the other. I love to grow the pie. I think we should all be looking to grow the pie. But I think, you know, what Gunnar's talking about, what Rahul does on his videos, and what a lot of people who have been in the hobby and have seen the good and the bad are doing, it happens in other markets too, right? You know what we don't have? We have like, you know, Facebook scammer groups and the whole line. We have card porn. Give them some credit for what they do. But in order for it to grow, you have to try to prevent the people who are in it from getting scammed, from getting screwed, from dealing with bad business practices. So what you are calling like, hey, we shouldn't be tearing each other down. Sure, I agree with that. But I think that it serves a purpose to call someone out who's not doing things the right way and is screwing somebody over, because then that one person who gets screwed is going to be louder than the 10 people who had a good experience, and they're going to be the one that keep people out of the hobby. They're going to be the ones that are like, I'm not getting into that. This guy just gave me a pick. This guy just gave me that. I got totally screwed. This guy did this, this, and that. So I understand what you're saying, Andrew, and yes, a premise, sure, we should be growing the whole hobby, definitely, but you know, watchdogs, whatever the hell you want to call them, you know, we have to make sure that the people who are in the hobby are doing it the right way. So that's, you know, that's you know, my take on your specific question.
But if you gave him a wrong pick, like, the responsibility has to fall on the individual to stop listening to people give picks.
I think it's even more than just saying a pick. And I think what Cage is like, again, I agree with Cage. It's like,
everyone always agrees with Cage. Get in line.
It's just,
he's signing autographs at National. I'll get you into the cigar night. You're an influencer. You'll get autographs by Cage.
Yes. It's not about the pick being right. Right. It's about, like, I think the community, like specifically like the influencer community as a whole, especially like the really big ones at the top of the spectrum, have done a terrible job of developing actual collectors. Right. Like, you've led them astray. Like, it's not about a specific card pick left and right. Like, the principle of everything you've brought them up is generally incorrect at this point. Like, that's why the divergence between like the collector and flipper is so great right now, because like, there's no common ground. It's two entirely different collecting bases almost.
Well, like, let me throw one positive out there, right? Because I've been kind of like, oh, they have this, the whole negative. I picked up some cards today for my Friday opening with Ian. You know, Contenders Optic came in a little box, you know, paid $350, $365 for it. He marked it up a little, but he didn't kill me. I also got two boxes of Women's Tops Chrome Soccer.
There's some big hits in there.
I'm just going to put those away because the prices are coming down on those. I'm just putting them away and not even open them. They've came down a lot recently. I may just buy some more. But this guy told me that, you know, he just did a sales tax for the last quarter because he reports the sales tax quarterly and the whole deal. This last quarter was the best quarter he's ever had. And this guy's been in business for, you know, decades. So to anybody who thinks that, like, you know, the hobby's slowing down the whole nine yards, this guy's selling wax. And he's marking it up a little bit, but people are still rabid. They're still coming in and buying tops. They're still buying all the stuff. I think a lot of that also has to do with that, you know, some of the products were pushed back, and that this quarter, a lot of old stuff kind of came out that was delayed because of, you know, whatever you call it, product line stuff, you know, delays and you name it. But, you know, that's just, you know, anecdotal, one store saying that, you know, things are as good for him as they can be. But think about how good they could be if, as Gunnar is saying, the top line people did a better job of protecting or cultivating collectors who were here for a long term. Andrew, do you think collectors, you think people who were in breaks are people who are going to collect long term?
I think there needs to be more collaborations. Like, remember when Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake collaborated for the Super Bowl show?
Of course, that's the one you remember.
People watching and engaged. So same way is collectors should have investors on their podcasts, on their channels. Breakers should invite collectors to do like guest breaks with them. I think there needs to be more collaborations even think about this, Raul. On the surface, you and us, we probably seem like we have different opinions and different outlooks in the way we do. But we've had each other on twice. We learn from each other. We find common ground when we have dialogue and discussion. I think we need more of that. So you're saying, Gunnar, and I agree, there's a divergence between investors, flippers, and collectors. Let's start having conversations together. Let's come onto each other's shows, podcasts, Instagram lives, and create content together and find common ground. And also that the benefit would then be for the audience.
I generally find this concept a little odd because, like, I grew up without anyone spoon feeding this to me to start with, and I had to like dig through forums and like look through it myself. But yet, like, this like new collecting society wants it like presented to them in a YouTube format. But I suppose that's like the wave of the future, because like that's all I see online now. It's like, hey, buy these cards. This is exactly what you should do. X, Y, Z. These are the charts.
It's funny, Gunnar, right? It's a generation of people who don't want to do what they're told. I'm not joining corporate America. I'm not going to do what you tell me. So do me a favor. Make a YouTube video and tell me what I'm supposed to do.
And the most insane thing too is that, like, I get like this younger generation's like, I don't want to do anything what anyone else does. And like, here I am, like, I've literally been doing something different for like the last couple of years consistently. Like, whatever. But like the I would definitely say like
you're an Arsenal fan, by the way, right? You want to be different.
Yeah, it's a life of pain, man. Life of pain. but I do think it is you are right. It should be a collaborative effort, and like people need to put in like substantially greater efforts into bringing better collecting minds onto the space. But you know, the truth of it is that it's not worth their time to bring them onto these channels. Like the biggest whale within vintage soccer cards, like the biggest whales in the space, they're like worth hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. Like to get an hour of their time to like discuss the things that they've learned, like they've made content on their own time and published it themselves and put it out there. Like it's a little unreasonable to ask, because like, again, like the upper echelons of like the collectors that know what they're doing, you will never talk to them in normal, like a normal societal ladder to start with. Like it's, their time is precious, you know, their time is precious. That's why you should follow the breadcrumbs of what they leave you.
And so is mine.
Yes.
Which is why we're going to end it at exactly now. Rahul, tell people what they should be doing. And I'm gonna leave it with you, man. We told everybody for an hour. We told everybody for an hour, don't just listen to people giving you picks, right? So, but I'm going to force your hand. It's not a pick. Do you think the Fed continues down the path that they're continuing down now? You think that rates keep going up? You think they're reverse course? Do you think we're headed for a little bit of a reprieve, and that helps you know, the hobby and collectibles and art and stuff for the next couple of years? What do you think?
So I think they're gonna raise rates a little bit more, and then eventually you're gonna have many corporate interests. They're gonna be complaining. And it's an election year, so they're probably going to reverse course. I wouldn't be surprised sometime like Q3, Q4. And then if that happens, right, I do expect, once again, those scarce cards, high demand cards of those goats,
sure,
those cards will probably get the biggest pop out of all the other cards out there. But that's just my guess.
Guys,
not giving any investment advice, but
no, you're not allowed. I understand, but this was very helpful. I love it. It's a very different conversation. Andrew, anything else?
My two guests. You guys are incredible. Miles, I'm a huge fan. I can't wait to meet you at National in 1 month. Raul, you're a legend. But really, shout out to you, Cage. You asked some very poignant questions.
I try. You
took a step up in my ladder of interest.
That's just because I told you I read a book.
You did. Any final words, Miles, before we wrap?
Yeah, if you want some actual advice, like, you know, where you should start your collecting journey is like going to Cage's profile, clicking on the profiles that he follows, go through all the cool accounts that he follows and just start following them and start down your rabbit hole of like crazy awesome stuff that exists that you didn't know that was there before. The cheat sheet is literally in front of you.
Influencer models?
Huh?
Yeah.
Influencer models is who we should follow. That's entire.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. Because I'm pretty sure Cage's card account is like full of influencer models.
You should see our Lucas Tigers Explore.
Oh God, the Lucas Tigers page.
I don't touch it.
When Andrew was in Mexico, I used to get private messages. Hi, I'm in Mexico and Ukrainian and have no clothes on. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? What are you doing there?
Over profiles, and I would send those DMs. My bad. Luca Nation, we love you. I hope you enjoyed this kind of round table. Please follow our guest, LAFC Gunnar, Soccer, Magic the Gathering. Just an awesome guy to follow. And Raul, AHI or AIH? Both great follows. Love you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you for spending some time with us on another episode of the Lucas Tigers and Bronze Oh My podcast. Do us a favor and like, subscribe. Now, you know what? Don't just like and subscribe. Everybody does that. If you like us, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your enemies, tell everybody. And we hope you got something from spending some time with us today, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.